Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll use that website to your advantage to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And you can subscribe to my free newsletter, you can subscribe to my blog, or just come and get the blog. You can listen to the show, live, replay, you can listen to the archives to your little heart's content, read articles, check on our Brain Trust members. They'll help you too. You can buy books there. Lots of books that you can buy. If you're looking for a business book, noodle around on our site there in the resources section of our website, and that'll link you right over to where you can buy the books. We've done a little bit of a review on those books, so I hope you'll check those out when you get a chance. And that's all at smallbusinessadvocate.com, including finding our good friend John Fox. John is all over our website in so many ways, including in the resources. His books are there available on our site as well. John is a tax attorney. He is a professor at Mount Holyoke College. He's the author of If Americans Really Understood the Income Tax, which may be the most important income tax work that I've ever read. It is the most important one I've ever read. It may be the most important on the planet. And he's our good friend, John Fox. Welcome back.
Well, Jim, thank you. And thank you for that lovely comment about my book. I really appreciate it.
Well, I mean that, John. I think it's the most important work that I've ever seen on income tax. It's fair. It's even-handed. You stick your finger in the eye of all those who need to have their eyes with a finger in them, and you gore every ox that needs to be gored, and I like that about you, John.
Well, thank you. It did get around. It did get down on Capitol Hill. They haven't modified their behavior, but I know from a friend who saw Karl Rove that Karl Rove read it, John Kerry read it. A lot of the senators, a lot of the people in Congress did read it. So it's there, but nobody in Congress seems to want to really do what I'm suggesting, which is to vastly simplify the tax laws and bring tax rates down for everybody, thereby creating a fairer, simpler, and economically stronger tax system.
Well, you're exactly right, and I'm going to try to find – I'm reading a book on Alfred Nobel, and there's a quote in here that I'm going to try to find while we're talking that reminds me of what you were just talking about. He was an amazing guy, and over 100 years ago, you know, he made quite a few comments about these folks and about how they behaved. And you're right about the tax issues, but you know, as you know, John, everyone's tax issue is sort of like their baby. If it belongs to them, if they like it, it's beautiful.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's very difficult. Once Congress has created some special tax relief measure, some tax break for you, and you begin to depend upon it, you're reluctant to give it up unless you are clearly convinced that something else will work. And Congress has been on the warpath for decades now, Democrats and Republicans, marketing tax breaks for people as a way of getting elected. And it's created this jumble of a tax system that nobody really can understand.
John, here's the quote that I wanted. This is from Alfred Nobel, and this was over 100 years ago. This is probably 120 or so years ago. He was talking about democracies, and he was comparing democracies to socialism, et cetera. He says, in former days, governments used to be more narrow-minded and aggressive than their subjects. But nowadays, it seems as though the governments are endeavoring to tranquilize the idiotic passions of a public roused by pernicious newspapers.
That's interesting.
aroused by pernicious newspapers. So I read that, and I thought, nothing has changed in over a century.
No, there's a lot has been repeated. Well, of course, Alexander Hamilton, who was the brilliant first Secretary of the Treasury for us, he required, and Congress listened to him. He said the only way. I mean, I'm very concerned about the level of indebtedness that we're lowering taxes, but instead of lowering expenditures, which would be the only way that you really get economic growth if you're going to lower taxes. You've got to match it by lowering expenditures. We keep spending a lot more than we're raising. And what Hamilton said was that in order to curtail what he considered to be this human nature, basic human nature, to pretend to be able to pay off debt but not pay it off, you need a sinking fund. Mm-hmm. And so for well into the 1920s and maybe 1930s, whenever Congress borrowed, they had to create a sinking fund. So if they borrowed, say, $100 million, they would create a sinking fund for $100 million, pay into it over the period of time that it was due. If it was due in 10 years, you'd pay one-tenth a year.
Basically an amortization.
An amortization. It created a discipline, and you couldn't simply say, well, we'll pay it when we get there. And
right.
It created a much better credit standing. I mean, today, as we know, we're financing much of our debt through China, Japan, other countries that are not necessarily in the long run going to have our best interest at heart.
But, John, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, when this is where you and I may probably diverge in our attitudes, the evidence is in that the tax cuts have created the recovery. The economy is doing very well right now on many fronts, on many levels. Unemployment is very low. The economy is doing so well that the Fed continues to hike interest rates to try to slow it down. And the evidence is in that the government has plenty of revenue. The tax cuts have not cost the government revenue. The problem is only one thing. We won't stop spending.
Well, Jim, we are going to disagree on this, and respectfully, because I have enormous respect for you. But the fact is that tax cuts of themselves will not stimulate enough. If you cut taxes by $500 billion over the next 3 years or so, you're not going to recover the $500 billion by economic growth. You can look at, I'm looking at the Republican statements on this from the Congressional Budget Office, and it's clear that we've lost the level of tax revenues, both individual income taxes and federal taxes, two and 3 years ago were at all-time lows, or close to all-time lows. The revenue figures, which are reported by the Congressional Budget Office, we've been spending a lot more than we've been raising. And
well, that's exactly right, and I blame Mr. Bush for this. Because he's the guy who pushed for the tax cuts, and I'm glad he did, because it helped a lot of small business owners, John, a tremendous amount. It helped him a lot.
It gives you a boost.
But John, I hope he's already missed the boat as far as I'm concerned, but I hope he doesn't end his presidential career without one veto. I mean, the man has never vetoed anything, and that is a dubious distinction as far as I'm concerned for a president. Let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back with John Fox. We got more discussion, maybe even a little more argument to go right after these messages. John Fox is our good friend. He's the author of If Americans Really Understood the Income Tax. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blastingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend John Fox, the author of If Americans Really Understood the Income Tax. And John's a longtime member of our Brain Trust. We couldn't do without him. And John, as you know, some of us had a good week last week because the Congress extended the capital gains tax and the reduction down to 15%, and the dividend tax down to 15% for two more years, all the way through 2010, I believe. Is that right?
Well, they did, and it's helped me.
And Section 179 allowing small businesses to deduct over $100,000 a year to accelerate depreciation on capital items a year. They included that.
Right, and so. So we have another few years of the rapid write-off of up to $100,000 for buying equipment and for small businesses, which is helpful to some and others not so helpful, but I'm sure that a lot of the small businesses appreciate that.
We love it.
the the change, I just want to come back to a comment that I think it's really important that we distinguish between business cycles in which we go from recessions to recovery and changes in underlying economic growth. And economists are real sticklers about this. And that's why I think it's much too early to know what the consequences are of the of lowering tax rates. I mean, if lowering tax rates automatically produces stronger economic growth, raising them would then slow economic growth. And the fact is,
I believe that, John.
Well, but the history is all over the place on it. When Bill Clinton voted to raise the tax rates from 31% to 39.6% in 1992, it began a period of recovery, of economic recovery. Strengthening stock markets, huge profits for people, and economic growth. And so you could argue that raising the rates. The fact is that when economists look at changes in tax rates over longer periods of time, and it's much harder to say that a particular change in tax rates changed the fundamental economic growth. Let me give you just a couple of statistics. They're in my book, 10 Tax Questions the Candidates Don't Want You to Ask. Between 1951 and 1963, the top average tax rate was 91%, and average annual productivity growth was 3%. Between 1987 and 1997, the top average tax rate was only 35%, but the average annual productivity growth rate was 1%. Now, I'm not saying that high rates, I certainly wouldn't argue that high rates produce higher productivity, but if we were sitting down for a couple of hours, I could take you through our entire 20th century and show you that there is no clear correlation between tax rates and economic growth. There are a lot of arguments about it, but I think that economists generally agree. There's a recent CBO report, December 2005, written by the director of CBO, that's the Congressional Budget Office, a Republican, an excellent economist. He was asked what would be the economic and budgetary effects of a 10% cut in income taxes across the board. He said essentially you'd permanently lose about 85% of the tax loss. In other words, you recover about 15% through economic growth, maybe 20%.
Right.
And this is somebody from their own.
Well, I'm not suggesting that we cut taxes more than they are. But John, you know, you're much smarter than me. I try to keep things very simple. And here's how I justify these tax reductions. Small business owners, the most precious thing to them after their children, is the capital in their business.
Sure.
And it comes to them very hard. It's tough to make a profit and
sure
to keep profit in the business. That we don't have access to investor capital like the big companies do. And so whatever we can get, whatever we make, whatever we can keep of what we make, is precious capital I've spoken to thousands of small business owners over the years, and they all say to me, I put that money back in my company. It helps me hire more employees. It helps me increase the quality of my infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. I buy real estate with it. That's what small business owners do with their capital. They don't spend it. They invest it.
But
as you know, small business is more than 50% of this U.S. economy. So whenever we have lower taxes, we have more capital, and that, to me, is why the economy is doing well.
Well, let me take up a pet peeve, if I can, that I think small business people should have with lowering the capital gains tax. One of the things about capital gains taxes versus taxes on corporations, that's a big difference. In other words, taxes on small business, on ordinary income, is different from taxing capital gains. One of the things that I'm sure you saw the story, but executives in publicly held corporations are getting a whole lot of their compensation through stock options.
I agree.
And those stock options they get to pay capital gains taxes on it.
When it ought to be regular income. In fact, there's a big issue about how the companies report that.
It is, and it's so unfair to small business people.
I don't disagree with that, John.
And it's a huge the story that was particularly offensive is that a lot of these people have received hundreds of thousands of dollars in dividends on stock options that they haven't exercised and in many cases will never exercise.
Right.
Imagine getting hundreds of thousands of dollars of dividends, Jim, on stock you don't own and will never own. And you can't do that if you're a small business person. You don't have that advantage. I think government,
that's
I think Congress John, ought to take that away.
That's the debate we're going to have to have. I do have a little bit of an issue with some of what you were saying. Next time, let's get you back on the show real soon. Let's talk about that because that is a very important topic and it's being debated right now on what to do with those stock options. John, give us your website, please.
It's johnofox.org.
johnofox.org. Ladies and gentlemen, check it out. It's an important one. John, thank you for being here. Good job, and we'll see you next time.
My pleasure.
John Fox, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be right back with Paul Amos. He's with Aflac. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.